The NetLake Storytelling Project is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Miigwech for listening to our stories.
One time Nanabuju, he didn't eat for a long time, so he was getting hungry. So he decided that he was going to go hunting. He went out in the woods and he took his bow and arrow, and then he started walking through the woods. So he walked for a while and he looked around and he didn't see anything that he could hunt. So then he kept walking. He walked for a long time and then finally he saw a deer. So he started following that deer. But every time he got close to that deer would hide. Then he would track that deer some more through the woods, and pretty soon it was getting like late in the day. He was really, really hungry, and that deer kept hiding from him. Nanabuju thought, well, I'm going to trick that deer. So then he fell down on the ground and grabbed its belly, and he started rolling around holding his belly, and he started moaning like, oh, oh, he was saying. Pretty soon, you know, after a while, he sat up and looked around. He didn't see that deer anywhere. So then he rolled around some more on the ground. Pretty soon he looked up again, and then he peeked out one eye, and he looked over there where that deer was, and he could see that deer peeking out, looking at him. So he thought, well, that deer is interested. He said, I'll try harder. So then he rolled around some more, and he even got louder. He started moaning. Oh, oh, he was saying. So pretty soon that deer come out from behind a tree and start walking up towards where Nanabuju was. And then it stopped and stared at him. So then Nanabuju thought, well, I'll have to do it again. So then he rolled around some more. And so finally that deer came up to him. And he said, hey, what's the matter with you, Nanabuju? Then Nanabuju sat up real quick and pulled out his bow and arrow and he shot that deer. So then he was glad that he had this deer meat. So he brought this deer over to and made a camp, and he made a drying rack. He skinned a deer and cleaned a deer and start cutting strips of meat off and started hanging them over the drying rack so he could smoke them over the fire. And then while he was sitting there hanging this deer meat on the drying rack, pretty soon he heard a noise, and it sounded like someone crying. It was coming from behind him somewhere. So then he stopped and listened. And then he started drying some more deer meat. And then pretty soon he could hear that sound again. And it sounded like this. It sounded like, wah, wah. So he listened. And then he could tell that sound was coming from the top of the tree, a tree that he was sitting by. He sat there and he listened again. And then pretty soon he heard, wah, wah, like that. And then he said, hey, that deer, that tree is crying. So he sat there and he thought about it for a while, and then he thought, well, that tree, it sounds like it's hungry. So then he took some of his deer meat, and then he climbed up to the top of that tree, and up near the top of that tree there was a fork between two branches. The wind had caused the fork to split there, and so there was a split between those two branches, and every time the wind would blow, it would cause the to split there to make that strange noise that sounded like someone was crying. So then he climbed up there and he found that split, and he thought, well, this must be the tree's mouth. He took some of his deer meat and he jammed it down in that crack like that. So he kept pushing that deer meat in there and pushing that deer meat in there, and pretty soon that tree stopped making noise. So then he thought, there, I fed the tree. So it won't be crying anymore. Then after a while, he took notice of where he was, and he thought, well, I'm pretty high up here. I can see everywhere. So then he was looking around, and then pretty soon he saw a pack of wolves. So then he was looking at that pack of wolves, and then he looked down at his fire down there where he was smoking his deer meat, and he thought, hey, them wolves are going to find my deer meat over here, and they're going to eat it up. He hollered really loud. He said, hey! Hey! And then he saw that the wolves looked over there. And he said, hey, Neej! He said, I don't have any deer meat over here. So then right away the wolves said, oh, that Nanabuju. And then so they came running over there and they ate all that deer meat right away. So then and Nanabuju, he didn't want to come down from the tree because he didn't want to mess around with them wolves. So then those wolves ate all his deer meat. So then after they were done, then they left. And Manabuju came down. And then he looked around and he said, well, I don't have any deer meat left. He goes, all that's left, he said, is that deer's head. Well, I have an idea. He said, I can turn myself into different things. So I'll turn myself into a mouse and then I'll have a lot of deer meat. So then he turned himself into a mouse and then he started eating on that deer's head. And then pretty soon he kept eating and eating until pretty soon he kind of worked himself right inside the deer's head. The thing about Nanabuju's power is that he can only maintain whatever he turns into just for a little while. So then he forgot about the time and just kept eating and eating. And then pretty soon he could feel himself changing back into his human form. He thought, hey, I better get out of here. So then he stuck his butt out and started crawling out backwards. But it was too late. He turned back into his human form. And then he had this deer's head stuck on his head. So he tried as hard as he could to pull that deer's head off his head, but he couldn't get it off. So then he thought, geez, how am I going to find my way home? I can't see. So then he started walking, and pretty soon he bumped right into a birch tree. And then he fell right on his diosh, and he said, awwa. You know, then that tree said, hey, why don't you watch where you're walking, Nanabuju? Pretty soon he started walking a little further, and then he bumped into a pine tree, and he fell right on his diosh, and he said, awwa. And then that pine tree said, hey, why don't you watch where you're walking, Nanabuju? So then Nanabuju sat there for a while, and he thought, well, how am I going to find my way home? Because my house is across the lake. He said, I got to find a way to get home. I know, he said. He said, alder trees always grow near the water, so all I'll have to do is find a tag alder or keep bumping into trees until I bump into a tag alder, and then I'll know I'm near the lake. So then he kept bumping into trees, and the trees kept getting mad at him, and then finally he bumped into a tag alder. And then so then he thought, well, I must be heading in the right direction. And so pretty soon he heard some little kids playing in the water. They were swimming. And so he followed that sound. And then he came up to the lake there, and all those little kids, they saw him and start screaming and took off running because they didn't know what he was. He looked like a human with a deer's head. So then he got in the water and he started swimming. So then he started swimming across the lake there, and pretty soon a hunting party came paddling by in their canoe. The guy said, hey, he goes, look at, there's a deer swimming right in the water. He goes, what, good luck. So then he took out his war club and paddled over there where Nanabuju was swimming. As hard as he could, he took that war club and hit that deer right in the middle of the head, you know, and it just made a big, loud cracking noise, like whack. And then he hit it so hard that deer's head split right in half. And there was Nanabuju rubbing his head. So that was the story that my dad used to tell me. When my great-grandmother was about 15 years old, and they were up somewhere around Basswood Lake area, and they were up there getting maple sugar. It was early in the spring. One morning she got up before anyone else was awake, and she got up, and she would, because every morning she used to go haul water from the lake where they would camp nearby. And so she got up early in the morning and she went down there to get water. And then while she was down there, these six short men were down there. They took her in what she described as a hide-covered boat. So then they took her and she went with them because she was afraid of them. In other words, they forced her to go. So she went with them. They came further towards the Net Lake village. And there they kidnapped another young girl that was about the same age as my great-grandmother. So they took these two girls and started heading back north. And so after the first day and night of traveling, the girl that was from Net Lake, she had a skinning knife with her. And she broke off a sapling, and she tied the skinning knife to the sapling. And then she put the knife up to her throat and let herself slide down onto the knife. So she committed suicide rather than go with them. But my great-grandmother, she wanted to stay alive, so she just did, you know, whatever they wanted her to do. So they just kept her as a captive. She said they traveled all that summer until fall, and she said, and pretty soon they came to a great salt lake. At this great salt lake, where they brought her, they sold her to an older Eskimo man, and she had to live there as his wife. And so she lived there, and eventually she got pregnant by this older man, and she had a baby. Right after, again, she got pregnant again, and so she had another baby. So she had a little toddler and a little tiny baby. While she was there, though, she made friends with an Eskimo girl that was her same age. She was friends with this young girl, and this young girl had a husband. She made friends with this young Eskimo couple. When she was about 18 then, she decided that she wanted to go home. She was getting real homesick. The young Eskimo couple that she made friends with, they gave her one of these hide-covered boats. So she waited until spring, and then in the spring she took the hide-covered boat, and she took her two babies, and she, in the middle of the night, she got in a boat and took off. She paddled up a river that was she paddled upstream away from that great salt lake. So she paddled all that night, all the next day, and late into the next night, and then she was too tired to paddle anymore. So she pulled the boat up. She broke the boat into pieces and covered it in the underbrush. And then she made a little camp there with her two babies, and then she fell asleep. And she was lost. She didn't know where she was. So while she was sleeping then, in a dream, the young couple that she had made friends with, they came to her in a dream, and they told her, whenever you wake up, whatever direction that you're facing, they told her, travel in that direction. And so when she woke up, she remembered her dream and the direction that she was facing, and she traveled in that direction. And she did that every morning when she would wake up. She would travel in the direction that she was facing. And while she was traveling, she saw people now and then, but she was afraid that they might bring her back to where she had escaped from. So whenever she saw people, she would hide from them. And she kept traveling, and she traveled all summer, and then she traveled late in the fall. Finally, she was exhausted and sick, and the babies were sick. I suppose they were, from traveling and trying to forage for food, probably they were starving. Finally, she was up on a hill looking down on a river. She made it that far, and then finally she collapsed. And then, so she was sitting there, and she couldn't walk anymore. She saw a canoe come around the bend in the river. So she called out to that canoe, and it happened to be one of her relatives, her cousin. So she made it back. So my dad used to tell me that story. Also, a part of that story was that when she made it back, she was very sick, and the babies were sick too. And then both the babies died within a month of her being found, and she was bedridden for that entire winter. My dad used to tell me that story, and I didn't know if I believed him then. I met my wife, and then she wanted to introduce me to her grandmother. I went over to Jesse's house. That was Jesse Drift. And then she said, I have some stories that I want to tell you. She said, and she goes, because I want someone to write them down. And the first story that she told me was about this young woman that was kidnapped by Eskimos. And she went through and told me the whole story, the same story that my dad used to tell me about my great-grandmother. And so I waited until she was done telling me that story, and then I told her that that was my great-grandmother. That was the one that had been kidnapped. But what my dad didn't tell me, and what Jesse had told me about that story, is that after she survived and got back, then the village, they made a drum. They said they were, it was a drum made in honor of my great-grandmother. And they said they would give it a warrior's name, and it was a warrior's drum. And that drum is given my great-grandmother's name. And then later I found out I have a cousin named Ruby Boje, and she lives here. And I told her about that. I told her, I said, I wonder what happened to that drum. And then Ruby told me, she goes, I have that drum. She said, I'm the drum keeper. She said, that drum was passed down to me. She said, and it's supposed to stay with the female relatives in our family. She said, and I have that drum now. She said, I was named after that drum. She said, so I have the same name as that drum and the same name as my great-grandmother. And her name was Sagajawe Gabawik Abun. My grandmother, she lived out where the Vermilion Social Center is. She used to go haul water down at the lake. One evening, she was down there getting water. She heard these two guys that were in a boat, and she could see them across the bay there. And they were getting in their boat, and they paddled out on a lake, and they had been drinking. They were drinking whiskey, I guess. They tipped over out there, and she watched them drowned. And there was no one around that could go and save them. These two guys drowned. And it was in the evening already, so it was getting dark. My grandmother, she told someone, I guess, but it wasn't until the next morning when they could go out there and look for those two that had drowned. So they went out there, and all they found was a canoe, but they couldn't find the bodies. That evening then, one of those old men, their dog came by my grandma's house, and that dog started howling at the lakeshore there. And then it howled all night. And then the next morning, my grandma went down there to, you know, go see what that dog was doing because it kept howling. And when she got near that dog, it started talking to her in Indian. She got afraid. They called one of the medicine men that was from here. I think his name was, he was a Boje. I don't know if his name might have been Joe Boje. And he came there and he slit the dog's throat. Because they said that wasn't, you know, that was not a good thing for that dog to be talking. So then he said that he was going to have a Jiskan, because he was a Jiskunini. And a Jiskan is a shaking tent ceremony. And so they were going to set that up that evening. And so that evening they set that that Jiskan up, and they set it up right where the Vermilion Wellness Center sits. And then my dad said he went to go watch. And he said that he could hear all these different voices and different animals' voices coming from that Jiskan, that shaking tent. And he said at one point he thought he could even hear his own voice coming from there. And so what the message was that all the people were supposed to come back there at the same time the next evening. And so the next evening, all the people came back there again up towards Farm Point, just when it was getting dark, and to the left of the Farm Point Road, they saw someone walking, coming out of the woods with a torch. And so that person came out with the torch, but when they looked then, it was only a torch, and there was no person. It was just like a fireball floating, and it came floating near the people there. And so, and then it started going back up, and it went up Farm Point Road. So the people started following that fireball, and they followed it down Sandy Bottom Road, and then it went down Sandy Bottom, and it went out into the lake. And so they followed that, and then a couple of the guys went and got their canoes, and they paddled out there where the fireball disappeared, and sure enough, they found those two bodies floating in the water. So that's how they found those two people that had drowned. I just didn't pay too much attention to that story that my dad used to tell me, or that he told me. And then one day we were in the town of Tower, and we went to Martilla's drugstore. And at Martilla's drugstore, they used to have like a U-shaped counter where you could go and sit and order. They made a homemade ice cream there, and they used to make malts and shakes. So my mom brought me there, and we were sitting there, and there were these two old Finlanders. Old Finnish men that were sitting across the counter from us, and they must have been thinking about Indians, I guess. I was listening to them, and that one old man said, remember that time we were out on a reservation? And he said, and they had that medicine man, and he had that tent shaking. He said it was almost touching the ground. He goes, I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't see that myself. He goes, that fireball that came out there. So then I believed my dad then. So those were the two of the stories that I wanted to share.
The Net Lake Storytelling Project is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Miigwech for listening to our stories.